Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Here it is, the 18th of December, 2012, and we are now going to talk about peanut butter. Do you love peanut butter as much as I do and as much as a lot of people do? Well, there's a great story about peanut butter, and we're going to talk about it today. You know, I say this frequently. Every food has its story, and it's true. John Krampner, who has had a lifetime on and off affair with peanut butter, is the author of two previous books, The Man in the Shadows, Fred Coe and the Golden Age of Television, and Female Brando, The Legend of Kim Stanley. He lives in Los Angeles and has a slight preference for crunchy, and his website is creamyandcrunchy.com. Welcome to It's All About Food.
It's good to be here, Karen.
Thank you. You know, when I first heard about this book, I just had to get it. And I enjoyed reading it, and I ate a lot of peanut butter while I was reading.
I've been hearing that from several people.
You can't not. You know, we keep reading about it, I want some.
Gotcha.
So one of the things I love about reading about the history of a food, and I've only found a few books like this. One was on tomatoes and one was on wheat. But what's fascinating about these books is how you really can learn a lot about history in general while you're telling the story about this one food.
Oh, absolutely.
There's connections to slavery and racism and poverty and wars, politics. What am I missing? Just about everything.
It does go all over the map, as you said. And just to give one example, Skippy Peanut Butter was founded in the depths of the Great Depression in 1933 by a man, Joseph Rosefield, out in Alameda, California. And originally, he targeted had it envisioned as kind of a food for the wealthy, and but he wound up realizing that his true market were the people who needed it just for the protein to stay alive more inexpensively than they could do with meat.
Yeah, you know, it's a very similar to white bread, which was originally for those who could afford it, this hygienic, clean bread. And now, unfortunately, it's something that feeds only those who have very limited budgets.
Yes.
Where the more privileged can afford the whole grains, the organic, the more natural foods.
Absolutely. And
that's kind of similar with peanut butter, too.
And actually there are a number of interesting things about peanut butter, which I'm sure your listeners will want to learn, in the sense that, of course, peanuts and peanut butter are a very rich source of plant protein, which, I mean, that much I assume your listeners already know, which is why it's so popular among vegetarians.
Right. Well, as you probably know, I promote a plant-based diet. I'm a vegan, and peanut butter is a very important food in my community.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There are some things that may be a little more arcane that you and your listeners might not be aware of, though. For example, there are two main ways of stabilizing peanut butter. One is hydrogenation, and the other is using palm oil in what's called the fractionation method, in which the palm oil is alternately cooled or chilled. To take up hydrogenation first, now I eat mostly natural or old-fashioned peanut butter. I don't care for, you know, hydrogenation, for all that, for the texture that it gives to the peanut butter. But the one thing that, as much as I hate to say in defense of hydrogenation, is it gets a bad rap regarding trans fats. There are some trans fats in hydrogenated oils, but it's a minuscule amount and of of no real significance. However, the problems, from my point of view, with hydrogenation are, one, tends to muffle the peanut flavor, aroma, and texture. And secondly, and this really surprised me while I was working on the book, the main oils used to hydrogenate peanut butter now are soybean oil, cottonseed oil, and canola or rapeseed. Well, most soybean and cottonseed oil grown in the United States is genetically modified.
Ooh.
So people who eat any of the major stabilized brands or anything that's stabilized using these oils,
mm-hmm.
without realizing it, is eating GMO food. Now, because of the rap about trans fats on hydrogenation, which, as I said, is largely overrated, what some peanut butter companies have done, and this is really kind of sneaky from my point of view, is they use palm oil to stabilize the peanut butter. And again, it's this fractionation process in which you alternately chill and warm up the palm oil, and you put it in, and that also stabilizes the peanut butter. This is marketed either as no-stir peanut butter or as natural peanut butter.
Mm.
What is the problem with this?
We were just talking about natural, that funny word that really has no definition.
Well, absolutely. Well, and it's especially, as someone who loves peanut butter as much as I do, to see peanut butter stabilized with palm oil sold as natural just
mm-hmm.
really chaps my hide.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, for the book, I interviewed this man, Frank Delfino, who had been both a plant engineer and plant manager for Skippy. And regarding using fractionated palm oil to stabilize peanut butter and then calling it natural, he said, that may be natural someplace, but it's not natural in nature. And but again, the problems with this fractionated palm oil, it's twofold. One, it's highly saturated. As a matter of fact, it's more saturated than lard.
Mm, wow.
It's a plant, but
that
it's
can't
more,
be good.
It's more saturated than lard. And palm fruit oil is even more saturated than palm oil. So anything that has on the label palm oil, palm fruit oil, or even organic palm oil, to heck with it. The other problem, though, is an environmental one, which is that palm plantations are being grown in the tropics to produce this palm oil, and they displace both rainforest and natural savanna. So both in terms of your individual health and ecological health, palm oil it's a bad bet, and so it may say natural on the label, but remember, it's not natural in nature.
Well, what's interesting is that those that have been manufacturing peanut butter were using the hydrogenated version, and then because there was some bad press, they found this alternative with palm oil. What's wrong with just natural peanut butter?
Well, the problems from general public point of view is, I guess to put it in a nutshell, people don't like to play with their food. It's
too much trouble to stir up your peanut butter.
Well, you know how we Americans are. We want everything convenient. We want it in a hurry. We want it now. But the fact is, I grew up eating hydrogenated peanut butter.
Me too.
And so to me, that was peanut butter. And then when I was in graduate school at the University of Wisconsin in the 1970s, I discovered Def Smith peanut butter, which is still it doesn't exist anymore, at least under that name. but it's still just a nostalgic cult favorite among some of us. And I was like, well, this is kind of a little goopy and a little messy, but by God, it tastes good, and the aroma of peanuts coming off it, it's like nothing else. And so the main thing to do, because now I pretty much almost always eat natural peanut butter for the book as part of my research process. I did eat some hydrogenated again. But really the main thing is just to, you do need to refrigerate it, because ordinarily the peanut oil will pool at the top, and then as light hits it, it will accelerate the process if it's going stale. So you put it in the refrigerator, well, actually it's the heat that, as well as the light, that will cause it to go stale more quickly. So you put it in the refrigerator, you turn it upside down so that the oils and the solids just naturally remix, and you're good to go.
Oh, I haven't. That's something I didn't know. I need to be turning my peanut butter up and down, upside down.
Yeah, well, it really just it saves you the trouble and expense of buying a mixer.
I guess I could do that with my other nut butters too, and my seed butters. Turn
Absolutely.
Them upside down. Okay, I learned something new, and you didn't include that in your book.
I believe.
I don't remember reading that.
Well, it's in any case, there it is.
Okay. Maybe I skipped it. Okay. So there's some intrigue, there's some scandal, there's all kinds of stories that are related to peanut butter that have gone on over time. One of the things that is so disturbing, I guess a lot of it happened during, began in the in the second President Bush era, when a lot of regulation kind of got loosened and companies were allowed to do whatever they wanted, and they foregoed a lot of safety.
Yes. It the operating political philosophy as far as food goes of the George W. Bush administration was what the Nobel Prize winning economist who writes for the New York Times, Paul Krugman, called E. coli conservatism. And he called it that because the philosophy is they are so dedicated to there being no government regulation that they would rather have people get sick from E. coli and other bacteria and food problems than have food regulated. And you had two major salmonella outbreaks during the George W. Bush administration. The first was in 2006-2007. That was with Peter Pan. There were several hundred injuries. And I can't remember the figure off the top of my head, but it's something like for every reported case, scientists estimate there are either 28 or 38 unreported cases.
Right. It's always bigger than we know.
Yes. And then in 2008-2009, you had the notorious Peanut Corporation of America case, in which seven people died that we know of, and more than 700 people were injured. And what's especially disturbing about that case is that emails have come out to indicate that they knew the product was contaminated and they sent it out anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, right now there is another ongoing salmonella contamination out of the Sunland Incorporated plant in Portales, New Mexico. And again, there have only been about 40 or so injuries from that case. Now, owing to the Food Modernization Safety Act that was passed in the wake of the Peanut Corporation of America debacle, when Sunland started to gear its plant up to start running again, Food and Drug Administration now had the power to say, not so fast.
Mm-hmm.
And as a personal note, one of the things that bothers me beyond the more important public policy aspects of what's going on, of course, is that two of my favorite peanut butters were made at the Sunland plant, and so I'm really having a bit of a hard time coping at the moment.
Oh, which peanut butters are those?
Arrowhead Mills Creamy Organic, which to me is the platonic ideal of peanut butter, and Trader Joe's Crunchy Valencia with flax seeds.
Oh.
And it's interesting to note that both of those peanut butters were made, or are made, because I'm hoping they'll be making a comeback, of course. They're made with the Valencia peanut, which is a bit of an exotic in that most peanut butters made in the United States are made with runner peanuts, which are 80% of the U.S. Peanut crop. And they are, according to some people who are knowledgeable about the peanut industry, runners tend to be the blandest of the four peanuts grown in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there have been some recent varieties developed which are a bit more flavorful, but I think the critics would still hold to their guns on that. Then you get Virginias, which are about 15% of the U.S. peanut crop, Spanish peanuts, which are about 4 or 5% of the crop, and Valencias, which are grown only in southeastern New Mexico and the adjoining counties of the Texas Panhandle. That's only about 1 or 2% of the U.S. peanut crop. Now, it used to be that most peanut butter was made from a combination of Spanish, which are very flavorful because they have a high oil content, and Virginias, which have a lower oil content and thus counterbalance the Spanish and keep the peanut butter from being too oily. But starting around 1970, a runner hybrid was developed. It's called the Flow Runner because it was developed at the University of Florida, which it was a bit more tasty than prior runner varieties had been. And the peanut butter industry tentatively at first, and then whole hog shortly afterwards, switched to the runner because it's a very prolific peanut. It roasts very evenly, and it's less expensive. The about the only peanut butter that I found still made with Spanish peanuts, and this is a natural or old-fashioned peanut butter, is made by the Crema Nut Company of Columbus, Ohio. Now, there are two Crema peanut butter companies in Columbus, Ohio, and you know both of their peanut butters are fine, but the Crema Nut Company, they make a crunchy using Spanish peanut butter,
mm-hmm.
which is just, it's extraordinary, because most crunchy peanut butter is really creamy peanut butter into which some chunks have just been dropped after the fact. But the crunchy peanut butter from the Crema Nut Company of Columbus, Ohio, they just do a coarse grind. And so it's basically all these chunks of peanut butter just kind of mortared together with a little creamy Spanish peanut butter. There is one peanut butter that I found which is just made from Virginia's. That is the Koozie Company, K-O-E-Z-E, the Koozie Cream Nut brand. It's made in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I think they're making some Spanish as well as Virginia peanut butters now, so you'd have to check with them and be careful. But what's interesting about that, other than the fact that it has kind of a distinctive flavor of its own, is the creamy peanut butters today are, well, they're very creamy, but going way back into early peanut butter history, you had creamy peanut butter and coarse or grainy peanut butter. You didn't have crunchy, which didn't exist until 1935 when it was test marketed by Skippy in Salt Lake City. So this koozie cream nut, it has kind of a coarse or grainy texture, and it's just a, it has, I guess, what you would call a different mouthfeel. It's neither bitter nor worse, but it's just interesting and distinctive.
Well, some people that are familiar with Whole Foods Market, many of those stores have a machine, and you can put your nuts in and make the butter right there, and it probably gives that similar coarse grind. It's a coarse grind, and I love it.
I think it actually produces kind of a creamy, it's kind of a creamy texture, at least the ones I did it. But since you mentioned the grind your own, there is something I'd like to mention on that subject regarding health issues. This is the question of aflatoxin,
yep,
which is a mold which can grow on peanut shells in the field, especially under conditions of drought stress, and which can, under some conditions, get onto the peanut itself. And as much as I hate to say anything good about the major corporate manufacturers of peanut butter, they actually tend to be the best on the aflatoxin issue. They, as a man who used to run the laboratory at Consumers Union, which publishes consumer reports, told me, in a bad season, the major companies will have 4 to 5 parts per billion of aflatoxin. A good season, 2 to 3 parts, which is as low as it gets. He said, you can't have zero. Peanuts are an agricultural product. They're grown in fields. And with the natural peanut butters, it's a bit higher. And but where it's the highest, interestingly enough, is the grind your own peanut butter in the health food stores,
where it
tends to be as high as 50 parts per billion, 50.
Hmm.
Now, to put this in perspective, though, and this guy who ran the laboratory at Consumers Union said, look, if you were born in the United States in the last generation or two, your odds of dying of cancer are about 25% eventually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he said, because of the quality of the American diet, and of course, as we both know, there are problems with that diet, but compared to the third world, it's still pretty good. Even if, let's round it up and say you have a 100 in, I think it's, oh gosh, 100 in, a, I don't remember if it's a million or a billion, odds of getting contracting cancer from aflatoxin. He said that would still be like 0.001. So even he said, even if you eat a lot of peanut butter, and that means a lot of even natural peanut butter, your odds of getting cancer would go from 0.2500 to 0.2501.
Whew, okay, so we don't have that much to worry about. And if you're really concerned, there are plenty of other foods that you can include in your diet that help boost your immune system and fight cancer.
That is correct, but I would still be leery of grinding my own peanut butter in a grind-your-own machine in a store.
Right, okay. We have a caller. Tom in L.A., you have some recommendations on grinding peanut butter?
I don't have a recommendation per se, but I do like peanut butter, and I wanted to know more about making my own peanut butter because I am a fan of it.
Well, actually, like you, I live in Los Angeles, and given the climate, you can grow your own peanuts here. Ideally, it helps to have a sandy loam soil, which I don't know what you have in your house or neighborhood, but you need to, the seed, of course, the peanut itself is the seed. Now, you can't use a roasted peanut. You can't plant that. It just won't go anywhere. So you would need to get some sort of seed stock in which, you know, which to use to plant it. Let's see. Beyond that,
I'm going to have to pick this one up further another time because we're out of time. Thanks, Tom, for your question. And thank you, John, for writing this book, Creamy and Crunchy. I really enjoyed it, and I think I crave peanut butter even more than ever.
It was a pleasure talking with you, Pat.
Thank you. Visit creamyandcrunchy.com for more information on this book and on John Krampner. And visit my website, responsibilityandliving.com, for all kinds of healthy tips on great food. And have a delicious week.
Thank you very much, Karen.
Okay, bye.
This is PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.